treaties have a long history in the land now known as Canada. Many types of treaties were made between Indigenous groups before settlers arrived. Today, modern treaties are being negotiated across Canada between Indigenous peoples and federal, provincial, and territorial governments. But what is a treaty? And what is the difference between historic and modern treaties? In Treaty 101, we will explore these questions and investigate events that led to the first modern treaty in Canada. The Gordon Foundation's treaty simulations focus on modern treaties with First Nations, Inuit, and Métis, but we will also look at historic treaties made with First Nations. So let's start with some basics about historic treaties. Historic treaties were first made between settlers and First Nations to support peace, provide access to resources, and to develop economic and military relations. They were then used to define the rights of Indigenous peoples and European newcomers and the use of lands. They were signed from early contact, which was around the 16th century, until 1923, just over 300 years. And what about modern treaties? Modern treaties are agreements between the government of Canada, Indigenous peoples, and provincial and or territorial governments. Unlike historic treaties, modern treaties are comprehensive and detailed, covering lands, environmental and social protections, economic development and financial compensation, education, local government, and health and social services. Modern treaties are negotiated over a period of years rather than days, and all parties are represented by lawyers and professional negotiators. They define rights and obligations on all sides that create long-term, mutually binding commitments.
There was a plan to get us to where we are, but we changed that plan. We came back and said, no, you're not going to do this to us anymore. We're going to get our rights back. We're going to get our ability to think for ourselves again. We're going to create our own opportunities. We're going to create our own jobs.
At the end of the day, these agreements came at a high price, but I believe that they could provide us with the foundation we need to build a successful future for our citizens and to allow us to take an equal role in Canadian society and a meaningful one in the governance of Canada. This overall is a good thing for all Canadians.
The first modern treaty was signed in 1975, but let's go back a couple hundred years and investigate a timeline of events and actions that led up to the first modern treaty. In 1763, when Britain became the main European power, King George III put in place the Royal Proclamation. This proclamation laid out protocols for British North America's relations with Indigenous peoples. It was the first public recognition by the Crown of Aboriginal rights to lands and title, acknowledging Aboriginal possession of lands not surrendered to or purchased by the Crown. The Royal Proclamation of 1763 became the basis for the historical treaty-making process. But the British government still claimed control over the land, and more than 78,000 settlers had already taken legal possession of land previously occupied by Indigenous peoples. Starting in the mid-1800s, a number of events impacted the government's relationship with Indigenous peoples. The Constitution Act of 1867 gave Canada exclusive legislative authority over Indigenous peoples and the land on which they lived. Also in 1867, the Canadian government put the Indian Act in place. This act only focuses on First Nations in Canada, not Inuit or Métis. It gave the government power over First Nations identity, politics, education, cultural practices, and other areas. It also codified the surrender of Aboriginal title of land in its treaties. By 1923, 70 historical treaties had been signed between the Crown and 364 First Nations. These treaties were mainly designed to secure land for European settlement. But in 1923, Canada stopped treaty negotiations. In 1927, Canada passed Section 141 of the Indian Act, banning Indigenous peoples from pursuing land claims and hiring lawyers. It was now illegal to pursue land claims, and all activity stopped. It was not until 1951 that this section of the Indian Act was removed.
When I was born into an era in which Indians couldn't vote, Indians couldn't go into bars, Indians could not own real property, Indians were forbidden to advance the land claim agreement, Indians were forbidden by law to retain legal counsel for the purpose of advancing land interests.
In 1969, the federal government attempted to pass the Statement of the Government of Canada on Indian Policy, also known as the White Paper. This policy was created to eliminate the special status of Indigenous peoples in Canada and assimilate them within the Euro-Canadian society. The White Paper was withdrawn due to massive criticism. In 1973, the Supreme Court of Canada made a decision in a case that would help usher in the era of modern treaties a couple of years later. This case had begun with legal action in the late 1960s by members of the Nishka Nation to prove their Aboriginal title had never been lawfully extinguished. After the initial action was dismissed at trial, an appeal was made to the Supreme Court of Canada. While they did not win the appeal, the Supreme Court acknowledged the existence of Aboriginal title, an important step that led to Canada beginning to address land claims. Later in 1973, the Comprehensive Land Claims Policy was introduced. This policy guides the Government of Canada in the negotiation of modern treaties. We'll leave our treaty journey in 1973 for now. Tune in to Treaty 102 when we will jump back in at 1975, the year the first modern treaty was signed. Then we will look at the events and actions shaping the negotiations and implementation of modern treaties up to today.